I forget the argument, but there was some argument over lunch. And one of the girls in the class came and snatched my lunch, slapped me, and punched me in both eyes, and I had two black eyes for a week. From Foundation Capital, this is How to B2B a CEO, the show about how to scale your enterprise startup and how to grow from founder to CEO. I'm Ashok Garg, general partner at Foundation Capital.
And now for something completely different. So I'm not Ashok Garg, general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm Sang, director of content at Foundation. I'm also the editor and producer of this podcast. This is a special holiday episode of How to B2B a CEO. Let me explain. Since we launched the show earlier this year, one comment that we keep getting from listeners, including some of the CEOs we've interviewed, is that you'd like to hear more from our host, Ashok Garg. Apparently, many of you want to know more about Ashok and his insights on startups. So, since things have started to quiet down for the holidays, I twisted Ashok's arm and got him into the hot seat to answer some questions about himself and about venture investing. Now, when we recorded this episode, I was a little worried because Ashok was still recovering from getting emergency dental surgery just a few days earlier. But that, as it turned out, was a great window into what a day in the life of Ashok Garg looks like.
It was excruciating.
Worst pain you ever felt?
By far the worst pain I have ever felt. I've torn my ACL. I've had three or four root canals. I've had two teeth extracted in very, very unsophisticated circumstances in the boonies in India without anesthesia. So I definitely had.
Oh.
I've dealt with pain, but this was by far the worst pain experience I've had where I was blanking out. I had one of those days, this is Wednesday now, where my first meeting started at 7 a.m. So I had a 7 a.m. meeting in Menlo Park. I had a 9 a.m. board meeting. One of my companies is going through an M&A process, and it's a very tight and delicate situation. And so we had a meeting with the acquirer in Santa Clara all afternoon, and I was hosting a dinner in the city. And then, you know, a couple of folks on the team had questions about their career. And so by the time I was done with the day, it was 1 a.m. And it was actually a great day. I had a lot of fun. But for sure, by Thursday morning, I was at an 11 on 10 on the pain threshold.
You can't take like a sick day.
You can, but like at the end of the day, I'm not big on sitting at home feeling sorry for myself.
So how is this affecting your work?
You know, I do feel like I am driving a car at 100 miles an hour with the brake pedal unscrewed. And so...
Wait, how do you mean? Just so much
It's just, you know, I'm running hard.
Yeah, but you like running that fast.
Right? I like running. I love it.
Have you always?
Yeah. I mean, I like living on the edge in that sense with my work. There's nothing else I do. So it's my, this is work and my hobby.
And your work is your VC, your venture capitalist,
yes.
Right? So what is a venture capitalist?
As a venture capitalist, we invest in an idea, in a person, sometimes a couple of people, and the dream that this can be something that will become very big over time. And everyone who dreams and comes and raises money in some ways trying to change the world as they know it. And our role, on one hand, is to help the dreamer, the founder, realize that dream and to be there as a mentor, as a coach, as a friend, as a shoulder to cry on. And at the same time, we're investors. We're not operators. We're not philanthropists. It's our goal to put a dollar in and get 10 back. So I think about my job as how do I marry what are essentially two very different universes in one.
How did you get into investing?
Sort of by happenstance. I actually, you know, I'd been an operator for 15 years. I was running the ads business at Microsoft in 2007, and I left to do a startup. I started pitching my startup idea around the Valley, and one of the venture firms offered me an EIR job to say, come, we'll help you get the company off the ground. And through that process, I got to know a handful of venture capitalists. And as I started to pitch my startup idea, I came to Foundation to pitch it. And Foundation said, hey, that's interesting. We're not sure we really like the idea, but you're kind of an interesting guy. Let's spend some more time. That was the beginning of a courtship process where in a few months, I ended up giving up on my startup idea and joining the firm instead.
Why?
The reason I love what I do is the opportunity to be part of creating something that is much bigger than myself. But equally importantly, because I think it really fits well with what I am good at and what I'm passionate about. I love helping sort of translate ideas into something more concrete. I love working with people to mentor, guide, and nurture them. On the other hand, I'm not the most organized and buttoned-up execution person myself, mm-hmm. In case you haven't noticed. Mm-hmm. And so it allows me to do what I'm really good at and not have to do the things I'm not very good at. And I enjoy the fact that I have the privilege of being able to talk to half a dozen incredible people every day. I get to pick and choose who I talk to. I get to pick and choose what relationships I have over a decade.
What's the personality profile of an investor?
So first of all, I don't think there is any one personality profile. There are as many different flavors as there are successful investors. At the same time, I do think there are some commonalities. I think many of the best investors have an ability to see the glass half full as against half empty. You have to be optimistic. You have to be able to imagine what's possible, not just what can go wrong. Because that's the world we live in. Everything we see has hair on it. It is rough around the edges. And so you have to be able to see what's possible. That's number one.
Because you're just taking a chance.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to hate everything you see. You have to see the good in the situation. You have to see the good in the people. I think the second thing as an investor you have to be able to do is you have to be able to find a balance between that emotion, that ability to see the good in people, with the pragmatic reality of what it's going to take to make that business successful. As an operator, you come in and you say, I can fix this. I can make this better. If I did 1, 2, and 3, this would be a better business. But again, as an investor, I have to hold back. That's not what I can do. I have to look at it as is, as it will be without my involvement, and say, yes, I'm super optimistic. I can see the glass half full, but what are the odds? What could go wrong? And how do I sort of think about the odds of that as well? How do you balance the glass half full with being pragmatic about the risks?
Do you think of yourself as a hands-off kind of investor?
I think of myself as a pull-based investor. And what that means is I can be super hands-on where it's required and where the founders I work with want me to be. And I'm equally comfortable being completely hands-off. So I think it's very founder and situation dependent. I mean, if you have a team that's in the throes of product development, and there's nothing I can do. I mean, frankly, even board meetings are just cursory. I have a company this week which is launching product, and they're sending out the first set of emails to prospects. And for that company, I'm the BDR. I'm literally the business development representative right now. I'm drafting emails, I'm combing through databases of contacts with thousands of names to come up with the first 50 people to email to say, hello world, we exist. Do you want to try our product? And I probably spend 8 or 10 hours this week doing that at a very tactical level. And I think that the ability to switch from being completely hands-off to being completely hands-on, depending on the circumstances, because the company is 6 people, they don't have a BDR, and I'm a little bit of an expensive BDR, but I'm paid in equity.
You're a little bit of expensive everything. So what kind of entrepreneurs do you like working with?
When I think about what kind of founders I'm most passionate about, I think it really boils down to 3 characteristics I look for. There's lots of other things peripherally, but at the core, I think there are 3 things. I think the first is I look for founders that have an ability to convert their vision into a product. Every founder has an idea, has a vision, has a dream, has an idea of the market they want to go after, the pain point they want to solve. But there are many different ways to skin the cat. And I look for founders who are just exceptional at productizing the idea, at identifying what the market needs, what the technology is capable of, and defining a product that brings the two together. So that's the first, product-oriented founders. The second thing I look for is I look for founders that have a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They really want to win. This has got to be really important to them. This is not just another job. It's not just another hobby. It's not just the next startup. It has to feel like it's life and death for them. And it's not about just money. It truly is about, I'm going to win or die trying. And I look for that hunger. Mm-hmm. I look for that ambition. And the third thing I look for is I look for founders that have an incredible learning curve. They are learning faster than their company is growing.
About business or about?
About everything. Mm-hmm. You know, some people come at every situation saying, I'm going to learn whatever I can. I'm going to come into tomorrow being better than I was yesterday. And they do that at a pace and with a rigor and a discipline that day to day may not seem dramatic, but when you look at that over years, in 3 years, they're just completely different people. Because for them to be successful and for those companies to be successful, those companies have to be completely different in 3 years. You know, typically when I'm investing in a company, it has 10 or less employees. And in 3 years, it's going to go from 10 to 100 employees. It's gone through two, maybe three generational shifts. And the founder's got to compress 10, 15 years of experience in growing up in 3 years. And I look for people who are capable of doing that. You know, day to day, I ask myself, am I doing well enough? Am I progressing fast enough? Am I learning fast enough? Will I be better tomorrow than I was yesterday? So the same question I ask of my founders, I hold myself to the same standard. Am I better today than I was yesterday? And if I'm not, I don't deserve to have the seat I have.
What companies do you generally invest in?
You know, I generally invest in companies that are in the enterprise space and that are applying machine learning and AI to disrupt, you know, some large existing market opportunity. I'm mostly focused on taking technical risk as against market risk.
If I'm an entrepreneur, what's the surest way for me to waste your time?
I have this privilege that almost every person I meet is smart, is hungry, is driven. And so very rarely is a meeting a complete waste of time. I learn something with every meeting I take, with every entrepreneur I meet. And my goal is for every entrepreneur to walk away having learned something from that meeting. I think at the same time, I think there are entrepreneurs who do make it harder for investors to actually understand what they're doing. And so to the extent that you do the work up front of packaging the story in a way that it makes it more consumable in a 30 to 45 minute interaction, I think that helps both sides.
So just presenting the...
Just presenting, I think structuring. And more, it's not presentation so much about slides and fonts and the visuals, but it's really thinking through the story. It's thinking through it, what abstraction to tell it. What's important in the first meeting versus what can be shared later. It's thinking through the arc of the story.
You know, like what problem they're solving.
Yeah, so I love for entrepreneurs to start by telling me this is the problem. This is the pain point that they're solving. This is how they're solving it and why that solution is a unique approach to solving that pain point. Then I want them to tell me a little bit about why that, if they solve it, that's a larger opportunity. And then I want them to end with how they would go about building the company and the business. And of course, all of these four parts come after getting to know the people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, start with telling me why, you know, what makes you who you are. Describe the problem. Describe, you know, your unique insight into solving the problem. Describe why that's a large business opportunity. And then describe how you would go about building the business. We'll be right back.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably the kind of nerd who understands that encryption is one of the most popular and effective ways of protecting data. But even if encrypted at rest and in motion, did you also know that data are still vulnerable to attacks when an application starts to run? Wow, you are a nerd. When was the last time you were on a date? Well, that's where Fortanix comes in. Not with finding you a date. No technology can do that. What Fortanix does do is protect your data even when it's in use. We call it runtime encryption. With runtime encryption, your data are encrypted and safe even when in use by applications. Fortanix, we can't help you secure a date, but we can help you secure your data. Visit Fortanix.com to learn more about runtime encryption, our provable, portable, preventive security solution.
Did you want to be a venture capitalist when you grew up?
You know, I had no idea what a venture capitalist was till I was 25. So, you know, I grew up in Sudan, in Nigeria, in small towns in India. The idea that I could get paid to do what I do today would have been fantasy growing up.
Why were you so itinerant?
You know, my father was an academic lawyer. He was, you know, an explorer in his own way. And he went to Sudan to set up the first law school in Khartoum, Sudan. He then went to Nigeria to set up one of the first law schools in Nigeria, in Kano, Nigeria, in the 70s. And I was a young kid. I just followed him around.
How many countries was that?
I was born in Delhi, went to Khartoum, Sudan when I was 4, Kano, Nigeria when I was 10, and then I went to live in a town called Meerut in northern India when I was 16. Where I completed high school. And then I went to Delhi back for college at IIT Delhi. And then when I went to college at IIT, I think it changed me. You know, for the first time, I met a lot of people who were like me. And I went from being a very introverted kid to, in a particular context, at least, a very sociable person.
What was your family life like?
I was very fortunate. I had a very uneventful family life, in a good way. My parents had a very harmonious marriage, as you know, as marriages go. My father somehow managed to structure his university schedule in a way that he dropped me off to school every day, picked me every single day. I don't know how, for the life of me, how he managed to do that, but he did. You know, so we would all have lunch together, then he would go back to work in the afternoons again. And so I saw both my parents a lot growing up. It was, you know, I was very lucky. I look back and say, I definitely had a much better childhood than my kids have, despite the fact that they have 50x the resources.
Why is yours better than theirs?
You know,
because you're a terrible parent? Or?
I think my parents are definitely better parents than I am. because I think the thing they gave me so much more than I've given my kids is time.
Were you closer to your father or your mother? Sounds like your father, maybe?
I was closer to my dad. Mm-hmm. I was closer to my dad. I think my dad was an idealist. He was a dreamer. And I think that personality sort of rubbed off on me a little bit.
Is he still
alive? Both my parents died. My father died quite a while ago.
Mm. What's your best memory from when you were a kid?
Oh, I have lots of them. You know, playing badminton with my dad. Biking, you know, I didn't have a fancy bike the way kids these days do, but I was obsessed about biking. I was a physics nerd, so I spent hundreds of hours studying arcane textbooks on physics, and I have very good memories of that, although very little knowledge anymore.
What's your most embarrassing memory?
Well, again, I have quite a few. But one of the most vivid ones is I was in fifth grade, I think. And I was a little kid at the time, relatively physically, and I was, you know, much milder than I am today. And I forget the argument, but there was some argument over lunch. And one of the girls in the class came and snatched my lunch, slapped me, and punched me in both eyes, and I had two black eyes for a week. And, you know, it's obviously trivial. But at the time, I think for the rest of that year, it was sort of the most monumental thing that had happened to me to have two black eyes by a girl in the class.
So was there a really pivotal moment in your youth that shaped who you are now?
When I was in high school in India, and the admissions to the IIT is through a national examination that happens once a year. That's, you know, a 4 or 5 hour exam. It's a 1 day exam. And if you your whole life depends on your rank that one day, and hundreds of thousands of kids give the exam, and 1,500 kids or so in those days would get admission. And I'd been preparing for that exam, and I was, you know, pretty confident that I would do well. And 2 weeks before the exam, I ended up getting jaundice and having incredibly high fever. And so I had 106 fever. And 106, you're sort of at the point when your brain's starting to shut down. You're pretty close to that edge. And so the doctor is like, look, this isn't coming down. And so eventually they got a huge iron tub. It looked like one of those old bathroom tubs, and dumped a bunch of ice bricks, big, big blocks of commercial blocks of ice, and filled the tub with water. And they made me sit in that as a way to sort of shock the system and bring down the temperature, because nothing else was working. Well, that worked. And so by the time I got to the exam, my temperature was, you know, close to normal. But I could barely walk. I did the exam. I did okay. I got admission to IIT Delhi. And so in the grand scheme of things, it all worked out. You know, that experience was very clarifying. I almost died. It definitely taught me to live in the moment. This idea that I had, you know, spent couple of years preparing for this exam, I had sort of had this ambition of, you know, doing incredibly well at this exam for years, could have all gone away in a moment. And so I think ever since, it changed who I am. I mean, I became much more social. I definitely partied a lot more in college. I partied a lot in college. Because I was like, I have no idea if I'm going to be alive a week from now. So enjoy today. And so for me, that notion of enjoying the journey has really come from that moment. And I think I feel like I have a good balance between enjoying the moment and living in the future.
I definitely think if you know Ashu Garg, like, it's one of the three things you know about him is that he knows how to have a good time, he's wicked smart, and he's a hot mess. So you've now talked to a bunch of successful CEO founders for your podcast, How to B2B CEO. What are you learning from them?
It's been such an incredible learning experience. When I started this journey to do this podcast, it was a sort of, I started a little bit of a lark, and it was your idea, and it seemed like it'd be fun and cool, and it was different from anything else anyone else was doing. I had not anticipated how much I would learn in the process. Because, you know, every one of these podcast episodes is an hour and a half of in-depth discussions with an exceptional and very successful CEO. And every one of them is different. Every one of them has a very different take on the same issues and opportunities and challenges. And I walk away both with answers, but just as many more questions.
What do you care about?
You know, for as long as I can remember, I've been inspired and motivated by making the world a better place, by having an impact. And at the same time, I've always struggled at what does that mean? What does it mean to make a world a better place? What does it mean to have an impact? And the way I reconcile that is I want to do things day to day that I enjoy doing, that I derive energy from, and that at the same time are moving the ball forward for society. I truly believe that society moves forward when people take ideas, translate them into a product, take them to fruition, build businesses, give other people jobs, have their customers, whether it is individuals or businesses, have a better way to do things than they did yesterday. I think that's what makes the world a better place. I believe, you know, progress comes bottom up. We have the privilege here in Silicon Valley today of being at the epicenter of that bottom-up revolution.
What would be a perfect day for you?
You know, a perfect day would be start a day with an hour with my trainer. I like meeting entrepreneurs. I like what I do, so I'd want to do that for probably 6-8 hours a day. I love going for a walk or maybe a drink with one of my CEOs in the evening to talk about what's going on, what's on their mind. I like hosting events. I'd love to host a dinner for a small group of people after that. You know, try to get home by 8:30 or so, see the kids for a little bit before they go to bed. And then, of course, there's all that email that I haven't done all day. And so bang away at email for an hour at least so I don't pile it up for the next day. And, you know, if I could wing it and get to bed on time by midnight, I'd be a happy man. Although that rarely happens.
That's a perfect day.
That's a perfect day.
It's mostly work.
I like what I do.
So that's probably more about Ashu than you or anyone else wanted to know. Luckily, in January, we'll return to our regularly scheduled programming. Ashu will be talking to a whole new slate of enterprise CEOs about what it took for them to scale themselves and their companies. Meanwhile, if you enjoy this podcast, please tell a friend. It really helps. Thank you and happy holidays.
That's it for this episode. You can find past episodes and subscribe to future ones on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. How to B2B a CEO is brought to you by Foundation Capital, an early stage venture capital firm with 27 IPOs, including Netflix, Lending Club, TubeMogul, and Sunrun. I'm Ashu Garg, a general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm passionate about helping B2B entrepreneurs who are trying to solve hard problems. So if this podcast speaks to you, if you are interested in growing from a technical founder into a business leader, drop me a line. Thanks, and see you next time.